Here we are, the final part of our discussion on the Wheel of Time TV show season one finale. This is the final part. It'll be about another hour because we talked about this thing for 3 hours. I don't know how we did it, but we did it. So if you have not watched or listened to parts one and two, links to both of those are in the show notes and description below the episode or for the episode if you're listening on one of the podcasting apps. So make sure you go and check those out so you get to enjoy the full discussion. But here we are. We're going to start part three. Hopefully you enjoy it. Hopefully you've been enjoying it so far. And thank you so much for listening. And I'm going to shut up so that you can hear me and the others talk more. Because we're moving through Rand at the end here. And we're going to come back to some final thoughts. So if you have a point to make other than we're going to slide it in deeper. And even if that is your point, you know, keep that in mind. Jot a note. To finalize kind of what I was saying on Rand, ultimately, I felt blue-balled. This was Rand's coming out. This was like, yeah, we already know he's the dragon, but why should we actually fear and validate the dragon's power? And this was his scene to show why the dragon should be so feared, so powerful, so whatever. And instead, as I think maybe Daniel pointed out earlier, might have been Rob. Instead, we get this incredible... I hate to say that I hate it. I hate the way it was presented. I wish they had saved it for Egwene's accepted test. Mm-hmm. But we get Rand getting Egwene's accepted test as a test from a Ishmael that should be partially mad, but is not. This Ishmael is very much calm, collected, focus. This is an Ishmael that has lived for thousands of years, comes out every 40 years, and is like, this is how I would destabilize the world. Rather than the Ishmael that we get in the book series that is like, hey, you got ghosts in your blood, Luz Theron. You should do serious shadow cocaine about it. That's it as far as like the scene by scene thing. Josh, gonna pass it over to you
for Rand or
for Rand.
Final. Okay,
for Jammet and Rand.
Not full final. Full final we'll do after remember, Jim like, goes
deep,
out.
Here's deep.
I actually really loved Rand. In
all right, guys, say goodbye episode. To Josh from the Black Theron podcast.
There it is.
No, I really loved him. I thought he did a perfect job of A, distrusting Moraine, B, asking all the annoying questions and getting none of the answers. And then when he was in the dream, when he was in the dream, he actually did something really smart. And was like, no, I'm dreaming. I don't want to talk to you. Sheathed the sword, woke himself up, and continued on their quest. There are two things that I hated about the Rand story in episode 8. One, I hated the whole, I've seen this place before. No, you haven't. I did not like that. It made no sense to me. It did no good for me. I didn't like it. It did not give me any happy feelings. The second piece that I absolutely did not like, I didn't like the vision. Now, what we've talked about with the vision is that the big key to him getting out of that was seeing or thinking about Egwene's autonomy, Egwene's will, what Egwene wants. And I love that.
Egwene I knew wanted to be an Aes Sedai at the White Tower.
This scene upset me. It made zero sense. It was not a battle. It wasn't even a battle of wills per se. It was a dude taking advantage of a very untrained, very naive person. And for a season finale, it just felt like a flan slowly collapsing in a cupboard. Like it was deflating and I did not like it.
All right. But they're starting us at a 2 so we can finish at a 10.
later on.
Oh, I can't wait to get into that argument. anyway, remind me, like, this is going to sound like a dick thing to say, but when I get to that point, remind me that I made the phrase fallacious argument, and I'll remember what you're talking about.
Okay, Jim. Cool.
I wasn't saying that to be serious. So it's more just a case.
Oh, I know. I'm not saying you were serious. Just that will remind me to address that point, and you'll understand why.
All right, but Jim, I'm bringing the Rand points home. So I'm the last guy. So I don't have a lot to say. I'll be quick. Yosha knocked it out of the park with his acting. I thought he was a solid performance for Rand. Everything that he portrayed, really, really well done. So I don't have any problem with that. The blight, the way they're portraying what he's journeying through, sucks. Hate it. Don't care for it. Stupid trees. What the heck? Okay, so I don't know what was behind the design and whatnot. I don't want to judge the creative choices and the budget they have, but that sucked. Okay, Eye of the World being the same place as Shale Ghul? What? No, hate it. That does not work for me. I'm going to buy into the fact that just Moraine doesn't know what she thinks she knows. I'm going with that. And that was a mistake, what she said, and that really isn't the truth. And please, please let that be so. The seal, that was cool. What they did then with, you know, getting Rand to break that. And I love the idea that that's what's going to free the rest of the Forsaken. But I am left with questions. I mean, they didn't clarify enough for us what we were seeing in the episode and what Rand had actually done. We're partly figuring this out from interviews afterwards and getting information. That's fine. They're going to clarify it more for us after the fact. Season 2 will help us understand. But I am wondering, are there 6 more friggin' room-sized seals all around the world? I mean, what does this mean? I don't know. I'm troubled. The final bit, the ending. Hey, Rand goes off on his own now. I had to sleep on that. I was not good with that at first. I'm like, this is totally changing things I love about the first 3 books in particular. But after sleeping on it, watching it again, I'm good with it. I think they can do really good things moving into season 2 based on that choice. Rand now going that way, and we're going to have other stuff with other characters, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm out.
Oh, which brought me to a final point. And we'll make this again. Love it or hate it point, very brief, very quick, just like their appearance was. And we're going to start with Josh. Well, we'll go reverse order, actually. We'll go Jim, Josh, me, Rob, Morgan, Daniel, and I'll keep track, whatever. The appearance of the Shan Chan. Love it, hate it, in the middle, reserving judgment, whichever your argument is. We're not going to do any explanation why, just how you feel, starting with Jim. Shan Chan reveal, what do you think?
Hate it, hate it, hate it, hate it, hate it! Okay.
All right. Jim hates it. Josh?
I liked it. I thought it was good.
For myself, I love it. See a little girl on a beach, cause a tsunami. Sounds reasonable to me.
That sounds very Shan Chan-esque.
You just made my point. Okay, hate it.
What do you think, Rob?
Oh, it's my turn.
Thank you very much.
How did Jim do it? I need to make sure I get it the same way. Love it, love it, love it, love it, love it.
wrong.
Anybody that's concerned, that sound effect is included as a joke. It is not a political statement. So fuck off. Morgan, unrelated to the fuck off, what do you think about the Shan Chan review?
So are we talking about how did I feel about the way they showed up, or how do I feel about how they looked?
All of the above, yes. But both.
Okay,
just
well,
overall impression of the Shan Chan.
Okay, well, I thought them showing up right at the end and ending it that way was good because it let you know, oh, there's trouble. I thought that tsunami-ing the girl was great because it let you know, oh, these people are horrific assholes.
There's a little girl on the beach, better do a tsunami about it.
Yeah, I was just sort of like, you know, okay, that's you know, lets you know. I mean, they in book 2, they engage in all manner of horrific and often nonsensical acts of cruelty. So it's just sort of like, why not?
Oh, that's weird. Tsunami, it sounds like shock and awe.
Maybe she can channel, release the Kraken.
Yeah, and then as far as their actual appearance, they look really exotic. The fact that they're speaking a foreign language, I'm hoping at some point they speak English. Somebody I've read online said that they should be having American accents, which I don't disagree with. I think that that's a good idea.
Sounds about par on course as much
Texan accents.
Texas. No, not Southern drawl. The South has dealt with enough. We're trying to get rid of it. All right.
I feel like just a general, American accent is fine. So maybe they just do like.
Sean Chan.
We are here for your oil.
For just like a general like ordering channeling in the old tongue, that's fine. It looks like as far as their stylization that they're combining the Shanshan and the Sharans, which I think is a perfectly good idea. Because what happened to the sound?
Nothing.
Oh, it looks like
nothing. We still
Andy, no, you're good.
Oh, Andrew, I just mouthed fuck you, Rob. That was okay. That's all it was.
It's like, yeah, it's like he set up the city gifts.
It went quiet. Yeah. So yeah, I'm wondering if because they look so incredibly exotic, like they look like the exoticism was like turned up to 11. If they're combining them,
these amps go to 11.
Yeah, if
I just want to know how Love It and Hate It went to a Morgan's whole podcast episode.
Yeah,
it's great.
Perfect. That's because I talk too much.
Good point.
You see why we limit the guest slots we have on, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
That has nothing to do with anything except the fact that I talk too much. And there's always nuance. But yeah, I thought that they looked.
It's not that you talk too much. It's that there's not enough time for us to accurately hear you talk about your valid points.
Accurate. Okay, yeah, so I thought that they were good. I thought that they left all of the non-readers were like, what the fuck? And that kind of was the point. And the episode on the what the fuck, that looks like trouble. So
Daniel.
I loved them. Just everything about them, loved it. It's super great. For non-readers and book readers, I think that was fantastic. Also, again, to Jim's point, these are the strong fucking show Sean Chan. None of these weak-ass book Sean Chan who ask people for oaths before they tsunami them into the ground.
Oh, man. Wow.
All right. So we are going to wrap this up with first a final thoughts. Everybody deserves their right to have a final thought. This can encompass everything. Going to ask you to cap it at no more than about 2 minutes. I'm going to be using whatever Microsoft determines the clock should be. Actually, you know what? I'll get Alexa to do it. We're going to start with Josh. As soon as you hear me say, Alexa, set a timer for 2 minutes, then you can go.
Suddenly glad my computer is not on speaker mode right now.
I know, right? That's why I hesitated. I was looking at mine to see if it activated. All right. Alexa, set a timer for 2 minutes.
2 minutes, starting now.
Episode 8. 80% of the show I absolutely loved. Loved, 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 loved. But there was 20% of it that I just... It was a very difficult thing for me to wrap my head around. That being said, the feeling of... angst and upset and what is going to happen next, I've not felt this since reading the books. And when I finish Winter's Heart and I go, what? And I throw the book and I scream and throw a temper tantrum and I go, when's the next book coming out? The season finale, though very underwhelming initially, gives me that same sense of what's going to happen next. And I love it. I know I gave a 6 out of 10. I stand by that. The season finale was not a finale to me. And it didn't feel very finale-ish. But I love my feeling of wondering what's going to happen next. It brings me back to reading the books and wondering what's going to happen and spending the next 2 years talking to my friends about what is going on, what's going to happen, what do you think is going to happen, and lets me know why places like Theoryland and Dragon Mountain, Tarvalon.net, why these places were so popular in the first place. I'll yield my time.
Alexa, stop. Fantastic. All right. Next, I'm not going to lie. I'm going to save myself for last. So next, we are going to move to Morgan. So, Alexa, set a timer for 2 minutes.
What the fuck?
Alexa, stop. Alexa, set a timer for 2 minutes. All right, you're good to go, Morgan.
Okay, well, I thought the show overall was incredible. I think that they did really brilliant changes with the writing. I felt disquiet when I watched episode 8 to begin with because I thought I couldn't understand a lot of the changes, and I thought that some of them were what they weren't actually once I, you know, read an article afterwards and it was like, oh, what I thought was happening didn't happen. And so then I felt better about it. I'm enjoying watching non-reader reacts, and because every time I do that, I get a better understanding of why they make the narrative changes that they make and how effective that they actually are, which makes me enjoy it even more. And, you know, I'll see people complain just vociferously on Twitter about the changes that they make. And I'm just sort of like, but you don't have anything to put forth about what you would actually do to make an adaptation. And so I just sort of feel like being super critical when you can't come, you know, come with a good narrative solution about what would be a great way to do it is unfair. I think overall the show is really great. I give it an 8 out of 10 overall. I give episode 8, you know, a 7 out of 10. I think it was the weakest of the episodes, but I think partly that's just maybe just because of a sense of anticlimax, and because there were changes or things that didn't necessarily make sense, or I cannot yet see why they would have made it narratively that way. But that doesn't mean I didn't like it, and that doesn't mean that I'm not thinking that, you know, overall it was a terrific show, and I'm really pleased with it as an adaptation. And because the characters are really what make the Wheel of Time, and the actors are nailing the characters, frankly, at this point, I'm so invested in them, they could do whatever they wanted with the show. It could be, you know, Morgan. I'm done.
Alexa, stop. All
right. Hard agree, though.
Who's shocked? Who's shocked that Morgan ran out of time?
To finish your sentence and go ahead.
Oh,
Alexa, shut the fuck up.
Marinka, you're setting too many timers. When you want her to stop, if someone stops early and you want her to stop, be Alexa, stop timer is what you need to say.
Moraine could slip her fuck pad Tarangriel into a saddlebag and go around the world and have like a romantic adventure with Swan, and that could be the show, and I'd be like, whatever, I'd be cool with that. So, you know, it's like, I'm fine. They can do whatever they want, and I'm here for it. So that's me. That's how I feel about it. Next.
All right. We're going to go with Daniel. Hopefully I get the device right. You know, come on, Amazon, work with us a little bit here. Okay, we have a contract you don't know about yet, but come on. All right, Alexa, set a timer for 2 minutes.
2 minutes, starting now.
To help me, so, again, I'm going to say this not...
Yes.
I'm going to say this not in any way, shape, or form as a criticism on anybody else, especially any other book readers, because I have always, from the start of this show, watched it as a show and not as a book series. And I think that that actually does a lot of justice to the TV show, because you end up with these two different worlds of, does it shot for shot the books? And the answer is no. And if that's what you wanted, you're going to be disappointed. We've had that on the books for over a year now, that has been true, and they've been warning us about that. Then you have just the TV show overall. And again, I can't agree more with Morgan as far as there are things in the show where I'm just like, I don't understand that. And then I'll go and look at non-book readers, and they go, that made total sense to me. Narratively, as far as a TV show, that was perfectly fine. And I go, great. It's not about the up highs coming down and putting taint into the series. It's about Rafe and Sarah knowing what's going to sell to book readers, but then also what needs to sell to non-book readers. Because even though it's a New York Times bestseller, it doesn't have the fan following that Amazon is going to need to keep this show up for 10 seasons without getting in a shit ton of non-book readers. That's my thoughts.
Alexa, stop the timer.
2 minute timer canceled.
Nice.
All right. I am going to reserve some BTP privilege and I will go last. So, Jim, you're next, right?
I'm ready. You all betcha. Right.
Alexa, set a timer for 2 minutes.
2 minutes, starting now.
All right, the finale, as many have said, it didn't feel like a finale to me. I felt let down by it. I was expecting more. I felt they had set themselves up to do more than they delivered on. So that was a disappointment for me. I was thankful for the rest of the season and hoping the rest of the show would be good enough to tide us through this finale now and people would stick around for season two. Thankfully, Amazon had already committed. So they're doing the second one anyways, and they'll see us through and we'll get over this and we'll forget about this taint on our experience. Part of where I come from that is, we cannot avoid the comparisons with the phenomenon and experience on TV that Game of Thrones was. And we hate those comparisons, but they nailed those season finales time after time. And so I cringe at that comparison. This was no Game of Thrones finale kind of thing. But again, I think they're setting things in place. And we'll live with it and we'll feel good about it later. I just don't feel good about it right now. I think this episode suffered more than episode 7 did from Barney leaving the show, from the recasting. I think they did not intend it to be what we got in the end. They gave us lemonade out of the lemons they were stuck with. And so we'll take it. We'll say thank you. There were certainly great things. No problem. But it didn't feel like I wanted. And I guess the biggest last thing I'll leave it with is there was too much then that needed explanation. How many of us were thankful for the interviews? And we could see what Rafe meant. And that's not what we should have felt after a finale going, what the? That word I don't use that you guys use on the show. You guys can say it all the time if you want, but I don't. Thank you. Thank you very much. That's how I felt. And I felt bad. There we go.
Alexa, stop. All right, finish out your sentence and then you're done.
No, I'm good. Boom.
That was it.
Mic drop.
As long as they don't fuck up the season 8 finale quite as much of
Game of Thrones. Amen there.
That's the one thing that they need to.
All right. Yes.
So I'll do mine. Alexa, set a timer for 2 minutes.
2 minutes, starting now.
All right. So I feel there are three different ways to look at the season 1 finale. One is as a pure entertaining television episode, which it shines in. It is entertaining television. Two is from the perspective of what does it potentially set up for season 2, which it sets up a lot. Now, I'll come back to that if I have time, because it's a fallacious argument. Anyway, the third is looking at what happens in the eye of the world from season 1 versus what happens in the books. From there, it absolutely fails. It rips a lot away. The best argument I've seen for the Horn of Valyr is it makes as much sense in the books to be where it is as it does in the TV show. I disagree. I think it makes more sense to be hidden in a pool of Cydeen that would destroy anything that tried to reach in and grab it. And that's why nobody has found it. Which is just one example of why I think that way. As for the fallacious argument of what it sets up for season 2, the argument of it being a good episode because of what it sets up to happen in season 2 is predicated on an understanding or perception of what is going to happen in season 2. It is one of those arguments that cannot be validated until it actually happens. So you can't say, like, there's still valid points to make about why you enjoyed it, but saying it's a valid reason why episode 8 was great to set up for season 2, you're predicating that on a perceived gain from the next season, which cannot be validated until it comes out. So in terms of quantifiable validation of why X equals Y, it's a fallacious argument. It doesn't work. It's, hey, episode 8 was great because it sets up for, you know, Loial to go and do this and for Perrin to go and do this. So yeah, Alexa, shut the fuck up. So that's kind of my thing. It's like a tree, a threefold kind of look at the final episode. So with all that being said,
does Rob after get 2 minutes?
Yeah, did Rob get his time?
Yeah, did you?
No.
Oh, no. So for the last segment, Rob, you're going to finish this out here before we give our final after episode ratings on it. I'm fucking terrible at this. I mean, I've had 4 tall boys at this point. All right. Fucking sue me.
I'm empty.
Well, go refill. Why Rob is telling us why for 2 minutes we're wrong or right or partially all of the above for season 8. So Alexa, set a timer for 2 minutes. Or ignore me. That's fine.
Fuck or you not. Too.
Alexa, set a timer for 2 minutes.
2 minutes. Starting
now. Okay. So I really enjoyed the whole season. I don't think episode 8 was the strongest. I agree with everyone there. But I am enjoying this the way I enjoyed the books. Like I don't know what's coming. I'm excited. I have so much material for theories. It is just, I can't even think about it sometimes. And it's so much fun. I'm loving it. It's just, yeah, I think, you know, nothing is perfect, you know, and this definitely has faults, but far more pros than cons in my book. And yeah, I'm really, really enjoying it. And I'm just the foreshadowing, the detail in things, the, you know, silly things like there's an example of sheathing the sword, you know, the cracks on the seal, the eye of the world, there's 8 cracks, which means 7 wedges in that, or you might say 7 ages in the turning of the wheel. Like just so many small things like that, which I am loving. And yes, the last 2 struggled with COVID and Barney and all sorts of things like that. But I think we got very solid. And in terms of Game of Thrones, James, I want to talk about that quickly. I don't want it to be like Game of Thrones. I don't want it to be like, oh, well, Game of Thrones ended every season on a massive high. I'm like, that's not what I'm worried about, interested about. I'm like, because if it just works on that scale, that sort of planning method, like, oh, it has to have a massive season finale every time because that's what Game of Thrones did. Yeah. Then all we're doing is chasing Game of Thrones when we should be trying to be our own thing, because our own thing is better, it's finished, and it's always, always going to kick Game of Thrones ass. And I'm going to stop it right there.
Holy shit, can't argue about kicking Game of Thrones, but the books do finish like that. So
I mean, at least the
books
are finished.
Oh, yes, yes. And Eye of the World is mildly is quite a confusing ending. Yeah. And here we are, season 1, a mildly confusing ending. I'm just like, you know, again, more little details, you know?
Lives all right, on Rob, through the TV show.
Rob, we got to have you back. I mean, we'll always have any of you back on. Fucking Alexa, fuck off. Alexa,
I love that.
Piss the fuck
off.
Oh,
that almost worked.
Thank you. Alexa, stop.
Hey, I just
you
read an
curse at her. She keeps coming.
I just read an article that Alexa like a told a little bro. Girl to touch a prong with a penny. So you can't trust her.
Yeah. I mean, I so much want to have those discussions about, you know, what does so much of this mean, and having discussions that delve more into the intrinsic metaphysics of both show implications and even the book series implications, because there's a lot of the book series implications that, you know, 1,001 people have talked about. Bran has talked about it. Maria, Harry has talked about it. Twatcast has talked about it. Dust the Wheel has definitely fucking talked about it. If they haven't, they definitely should. We've got more recommendations to our take on what Dusty Wheel says than half of everything else, which is fantastic. If that's your recommendation, just tell us. Let us know. We're fine with it. I don't give a shit. I'll chomp off anybody's bit. I'll let them know that we are, but
don't chomp off my bit.
I'd
like to keep my bit where it is.
I am. I'm chomping off your size 7 bit. But these kind of discussions, they're fun because they always generally spawn the same sorts of like Rob is like playing Josh laughing, but it's actually him riling in pain. but these discussions always spawn off these really good theoretical conversations. I mean, you have six people here right now in this episode, whether you're listening or watching. Do both, please. And if you're watching, subscribe to us, like us, unsubscribe to everyone. No, go to everybody else and subscribe to their YouTube channel. Go and subscribe to their podcast. Go and do all that stuff. Links will be down in the description / show notes below. Because they're not one of those people that I have people on and not link them in the description below. Because we love everybody that comes on and talk and, you know, tolerates us for, you know, longer than we expected.
I was about to say 3 hours at this point.
Yeah.
It's been hours, isn't it? It's been fun though.
Oh, it says 23. Sorry, I thought it said 22. But so these are the kind of discussions we love to have, the kind of discussions where we get into the more metaphysics of the Wheel of Time show, how it relates to the books from the show, which we can only do from the show based off what we have from the show. There's a lot that we've talked about where all of us have had points where we wanted to go back and counter somebody else's argument. That's the nature of discussion. That's how it works. And that's just not something we built into the time here. In fact, we didn't even build into the time here what we actually discussed. So let us know in the comments section down below, the comments on the podcast, comments on the YouTube, whatever, down below, what you think about the episode and what we said here. We're going to finish things off here with a readdressing, and hopefully nobody cheated and wrote down a notepad so they can say the same number again, a ranking of season 1, episode 8. And we're going to start with Daniel. 1 out of 10, what are you ranking?
So mine is actually going to be the same, because it's going to be an 8. 8 out of 10. I actually still really loved the episode or the season ending, and I think that the spirit of the books was present. So regardless of anyone else's opinions, and regardless of what has been said here, which there have been great points on both directions, 8 out of 10.
I don't think that's the same you said at the start.
It is.
I think you gave it a nine.
Oh! 9.5.
One!
Definitely didn't give it a 5. That definitely didn't
Jamie
happen.
Says you gave it a 7, which I know isn't right. True. I know that's not right.
Yeah.
But it's closer. Anyway. Oh, anyway. It's Jamie's rating. Never mind. Anyway, Morgan, what do you give it?
Okay.
I still gave it a 7. I think it was really strong. I think it was the weakest episode of the season, but you know, I just feel like it was still a good episode. They were all great. I loved the show.
Oh, I forgot my main point. My main point was that it needed at least another 4 to 6 weeks in post because the Trollocs look terrible.
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
So like at most I might upgrade mine to a 6. And that's like pulling on heartstrings, trying to give undue logical credence to the COVID-19 pandemic and you know the Barney Harris thing. I personally, and I can talk about it later. Hey, if any of the three of you or anybody else wants to have me on to talk about why I don't think the COVID-19 pandemic and the Barney Harris like casting thing is an excuse, more than happy to do it. But I don't think it's a valid excuse. At most, I go from a 5 to a 6 out of 10. Rob.
Sticking with 8. You've all been eloquent and sometimes long-winded. I mean that in a loving way, obviously.
I feel called out.
You haven't swayed me, and I'm sticking with an 8. And folks, before I get my time cut off here, like, subscribe, and comment below, or you're a dark friend.
I like it. Jim, what's your... After this intellectual extravagant, definitely extended out discussion.
Also with the four kings running through your veins.
I still hold to my 6, a hard 6. I think what I take away from this discussion, I appreciate everything you guys added to my thoughts here, but I walk away the most flabbergasted that you all love the Sean Chan. I can't get that. There's so much that bugged me with it, and it didn't bother any of you, and I feel so alone, but I love you anyways.
Maybe we just didn't have time to talk about what bugged us, you know? They do have bug helmets. I mean, no. Josh, your final rating, 1 out of 10 on the show, whatever your metric is.
I'm going to keep it at a 6 because...
Oh, you went down 0.5. All right.
No. I'm a 6.
Initially, it was 6.5, I think.
As I say, like, the stuff that I really loved about the show, I really, really love. But the things that I do not love about the show, I really, really don't love. And so I'm looking forward to receiving the context of future seasons. And then, you know, as with the books, what's my prediction of what's going to happen is I'm going to watch season two, and I'm going to be halfway through season two, and I'm going to go, wait, hold on. I need to go back and watch season one again. And then we're going to go back and watch season one. And season one, episode 8, is going to be phenomenal. And we're going to go, oh, Rafe, you brilliant bastard. My God, how the hell did you do that? And then we are all going to have this episode again. And I have...
I'll book the day off work.
As a law thing, you didn't read the fine print of the contract. It obligated you to a part two, apparently.
I have faith.
And I was like, hold up.
Episode 8.
Something ain't right.
Season 1, the season 1 finale. Once we get through season 2, I would be willing to bet all of our ratings will go up. That's my prediction and my gamble and my bet.
Okay.
All right. So when I edit, I'll put season 1 on the screen. Or not season 1. Yeah, I'm not going to like play season 1.
Is that why it's 4 hours long, this recording?
We almost have enough time.
You know, season 1 in like, two times speed or something, you know?
First part of the episode, when we give our ratings, I'll put it up on each of our screens. At the end, I'll put up each of our ratings again, and you can go back and look and compare how they may or may not change. By all means, if you disagree, if you have comments, you have thoughts on it, which I expect a lot of people do, given that it is the season finale,
give us all of your thoughts.
Yes. Hello. The in the comments.
Yes. Give us I've TikTok, stayed up till 10 past 4 in the morning. So if you don't comment,
it's true.
I'm coming for
Please
you.
Please do Malkier Rob a favor and comment below. Go follow his channel. He's dedicated to this. Okay.
Yeah. He never sleeps.
You will say obsessed so nicely. It's very kind.
Yeah. That's what I was about to get into as we round this out. Again, we give our guest another opportunity, another chance to tell where they're from, what they do, that kind of stuff. However you want to plug yourselves. And Rob, we're going to start with you. However you want to plug yourself, go for it now.
Plug yourself on our stream. Do it.
Oh, wow. That's,
see what happens.
Where else could I plug myself but on Black Tower, except maybe at North Harbor. But go to the YouTube, folks. Like, you know, go to YouTube, go sub there. And apparently I only have 2 minutes because that unit's going to beep Andrew again. But yeah, just find me there. Everywhere except the blighted place called Facebook, you can just search Malkier Talks and you will find me. I do lots of everything. And hit up the YouTube. That's the one no one's going to at the moment in terms of like subbing. Like,
we're having the same problem there.
It's like, disappointing.
What do you mean? What do you mean you? We. But we also don't put out like YouTube exclusive content. Like our live streams and our we'll talk about this like briefly after. This is where you're getting into like the more Patreon style content. Anyway, Morgan.
Yes.
For somebody that does so much prep. Here's the thing. I don't point it out to disparage anybody else that doesn't do the same amount. Everybody does some degree of prep for their episodes. But of the other Wheel of Time content creators that we have worked with, or at least I have worked with, and talked to about the process, and we've got another little kind of content creator advisory episode that's coming out here in the near future. I just have to, you know, buckle down and do my job and fucking edit. And it'll be out there. You put such an incredible amount of work into your episodes. Like, there's one thing to say that, you know, editing an episode is can be a struggle and an effigy of, like, you know, like Greek worship proportions of itself. But to sit there and do the research and essentially write a full research paper on it and then do a podcast by yourself on it. Like, I can't imagine doing a podcast with just myself. I would hope everybody would unsubscribe and be like, yeah, you're fucking trash. Well, not hope, but you put so much individual effort into this. You I don't want to say you're in this by yourself, because we all support you and we all want you to succeed and we love what you do. But when it comes to the finished product, you do this by yourself. Like, yeah. I can't promote you enough for the amount of work you put in to what you do and the content you put out. It's incredibly amazing. I've used it as research and resource material for episodes we've done in the past. I guarantee I'll do it for in the future. Tell everybody where they can find what you do.
Well, if you go to my Twitter at Pod of the Dragon, there's links for both my YouTube and for my podcasting host site. So on YouTube, I'm a little more relaxed. My go-to thing is more visible and less prepared. So I'm more likely to just kind of talk out my ass about the show. And then, yeah, I do. I mean, Andrew makes it sound more grand than it is like research level paper, but it is lazier and sloppier. I do, you know.
Wait, you write like 5 scripts. Come on, Morgan.
I do two drafts because the first one I do actually talk out my ass, and so I want to sound smarter, so I like do up the notes, and then that way when I do it the second time I have something to read off so it sounds intelligent.
Morgan, 2 scripts is 3 more scripts than we ever do.
Yeah.
And we've even dabbled in writing scripts, and even when we have a script, we don't script.
All that means is I'm afraid of making mistakes, so yeah. I'm really interested in
doing it right.
Literary analysis of the Wheel of Time. You know, at one point I wanted to be an English professor, but you know, life got in the way, and in the end it was like, all I ever want to teach about is the Wheel of Time, and you're never going to get, you know, a university department head to sign off on, you know, that shit. So it's just
give it 5 years, there'll be a degree for you to, you know,
they'll be begging you. They'll be like, oh, yep. You work with Amazon? Please come and teach it.
You're laying like, the foundations now.
But Amazon is paying for my yacht. Why would I want to go work in an academic environment?
We're all shills.
You throw in Wheel of Time content and you get a free like 2 yachts with it. That's how it
Besides,
works.
If I'm you know, acting as a professor in an environment, I can't say fuck. And I say it a lot in my podcast. And also it's a little more casual. So it's very, you know, personal at the same time. There's a lot of, you know, humanistic, I guess somebody called it humanistic elements. I don't know. I overshare. Oh, that's what it is.
You're super humanistic. Like,
I overshare a lot. Well,
that's part of what makes a podcast so engaging, right? Feeling like the person that is listening, that is stuck in their car for hours of travel, is just listening and feel like they're part of the conversation. That's what makes a lot of podcasting so engaging. I mean, it's not the only amount, but.
Before you hop to Jim, I want to ask a quick question of Morgan from live chat.
Nope.
They're curious. Does Percival help you with the scripts and the podcast?
No, Percival is lazy, and you know, he peeps outside the door. You know, he peeps like a, well, not exactly like a bird, but you know, if a cat were a bird, it would be him.
Knock, knock.
Where you gonna feed me?
Yeah, basically.
That being said, Rob, I know you know this, but we do listen to the content you put out as well. And a lot of your theories and stuff will absorb some component of into talking about. It may not always be obvious, but you know, we do listen and absorb. Jim, a lot of the same. Listening to a dad that has a son that is going through the series and just kind of pulling some of these ideas and thoughts. This is what makes the Wheel of Time Phantom and especially the community of content creators so incredible. Jim, shout out what you do, where you're from, where people can find you so that they can get the same incredible source material as we do.
Yeah, for our podcast, Fantasy for the Ages, that's our niche. It's my son and I. You know, there was this huge Wheel of Time fandom out there years ago in the 90s and stuff. When I'm reading the books, I knew none of it. I never found any of it. I had to make someone that I could talk to Wheel of Time with. So
that's commitment. That's real commitment, folks.
We have a 29-year age gap, and that brings the humor and fun to our podcast episodes because he comes from his perspective. I have mine. We see it very differently. We talk about it, and then we go on these tangents where he's teaching me what the young people say, and I'm like, what? And it's just, that's our element. That's
the
our
Wheel
fun.
Of Time.
But we're really
turns.
Just sharing.
And I turn out Spawn to talk about.
That's turns. It. That's it.
Yeah, Rand is the dragon reborn. Right, you know? Hard cap.
So we get to talk about this stuff, and we share the same fun and passion for Wheel of Time and for all fantasy fiction. But you can find us. We're active on Twitter. In fact, you know, we've got all sorts of fun things happening all the time on Twitter. So look for Fantasy for the Ages. Yes, there is a tournament right now in January. Just getting going. And we're, you know, we do have a YouTube channel, and our podcast is available Spotify, Apple, Google, all the places anybody looks for stuff. So just come find us. We do have a website too, but I don't think anybody ever goes there. But it's there. Fantasy for the Ages. Come find us. We're good people. Zach would say we have cookies.
What's the website link? It's just fantasyfortheages.com.
Fantasyfortheages.net.
Now, how Jim said no one goes there? Like, even Jim doesn't go. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, I don't know. Google it. You find it. Now, the easiest way to find us, honestly, is Twitter. And we always have a link there to our Discord, too. We've got friends on Discord. It's a great place to hang out, have fun. Some of you have been there. It's good to see you around.
Don't try and win the ranking competition. You will just lose. Like, I gave up trying to chase that down a while ago. I was like, oh my gosh. Jordo's got that unlock still, isn't it?
Oh man, Jordo has us all crushed. It's true. It's my server, and I look up at him from below. How's the air? Yeah, it's great.
But hey, if at the worst case scenario, you can't find the podcast, you can't find the YouTube, all the links are down in the description below. If you're watching on YouTube, they're in the show notes. If you're listening on audio platform, any audio platform, they're all shared across the same way. We cannot thank the three of you so much because, well, like we said at the beginning, we had a plan for this episode. We had a planned guest. They came down with COVID and cannot join. And through a mutually beneficial, like, kind of content creator community, you were all able to join in with us. And we cannot thank you enough. A 6-person panel to talk about episode 8 obviously was a ton to take on. And I'm not going to talk too much longer about it because we're already well over time. But thank you so much for this. Go and make sure you follow everybody that has been a guest on this show. If you want anything of ours, blacktarpod.com. Go there. You'll find everything about us. You'll find a way to follow us, to find our YouTube, to find our Twitter, to find our Instagram, to find our TikTok. Hopefully should be up there by now because we have one of those. Because, you know, we are people in 25 plus year age group that use TikTok because it is what it is. And Critter proved that it is definitely a platform we should be on. But that has been it for our review with guest of season 1, episode 8 of The Wheel of Time. You've all been fantastic for tolerating us for so long. Our guest especially, I don't know how you did it. You deserve a prize for it. If I had one to give you, I would give it to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Andrew, I have been, give it to you.
I have been Andrew, your Bajan Mihail.
And I have been Josh, your Soravan Mihail, and we hope that you're just a little bit more mad now than you were at the beginning of this show.
And I have been Daniel, your Amon Khan Mihail, and from all of us here at the Black Tower Podcast, as well as all of our guests, we are hoping that you are having a great morning, and in case we don't see you again, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
So much trouble, just fitting.